after I started to really put all my energy into being the best athlete I could, it made it a lot easier to deal with being on the road for a month. It made it a lot easier to overcome injuries, and that just built your confidence.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of 80% Mental. I'm Dr. Pete Olushaga, and this is a podcast all about the psychology of sport and performance. I hope you've been enjoying the third series of the podcast so far. I'm trying to explore the psychology of as many different aspects and types of performance as I can. And we've had an amazing range of performers, psychologists, coaches, actors, singers, dancers, all talking about how psychology underpins what they do. I've been fortunate enough to have some absolutely incredible guests so far, and today is no exception. One thing I haven't explored yet is the psychology of the slopes, winter sports, snowboarding, and I am so thrilled to introduce my two guests today. First up, we have Alik Herbert. Alik is the founder of Mental Performance Center for Action Sports and has been a snowboard instructor and a coach for close to a decade. Alik is currently working with Liberty University ski and snowboard freestyle team as their mental performance consultant and as a cognitive performance specialist at Holistic Health and Fitness. Alik, welcome to 80% Mental.
Thanks. It's pretty awesome to be on here.
So Alik and I met just kind of randomly at the ASP conference, right? In, where was it again?
Orlando.
Florida. Yeah, Orlando, Florida. We just kind of got talking about, you know, what you do, Alik, and kind of how cool it would be to do an episode of the podcast on the psychology of kind of snowboarding, winter sports. Yeah. So here we are, a few months later, we've managed it.
Yeah, no, it's I'm pretty excited to be, you know, have this conversation with two guys that are just legends, and so I'm excited to see where the conversation goes.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to kind of get into this as well. But my second guest, I'm truly honored to be joined by my second guest today. Legend, influencer, inspiration, professional snowboarder, and father, the one and only Stevie Bell. Stevie, welcome to 80% Mental.
Thanks for having me. I'm super hyped to indulge in this conversation with the two of you and get to know each other a little bit better as along the way too. So
whereabouts are you now, Stevie?
I am currently sitting in Salt Lake City, Utah, just looking at the mountains right now as we have this conversation.
We were just talking before we started recording. I've been to Salt Lake City once. Beautiful scenery, absolutely beautiful scenery. We went up in the ski lift to the top of the Olympic Park. You can kind of see the mountains. It's beautiful. We also went to the Utah State Fair. So Gemma Douglas and I, shout out Gemma Douglas, went to the Utah State Fair one afternoon, and I won't get into it, but it was an experience.
So you must have been here during sometime like the end of the summer then.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think it was like September-ish.
Late summer, beginning of fall. That's typically when that Utah State Fair comes, and I always take my family down there, my little girls. It's fun, but yeah, you can definitely get yourself into some interesting situations or see some interesting people or things. You know?
Yeah, I think it was the bears on scooters that was the point at which we thought, okay, that enough now, we're leaving. But yeah, Stevie, I'm so thrilled that you've agreed to come on the podcast and chat with us today.
I'm excited.
So let's kind of get started with the questions then. And I want to find out a little bit about your backgrounds, really. So Stevie, like, do you remember the first time that you strapped in, you know, the first time you were kind of stood on top of a mountain, just ready to go down?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Peter. It's I remember the first time I got to the top of the mountain very vividly. I remember it like it was yesterday. To say that I was ready is no, absolutely not. The first time I went snowboarding, like actually to a resort, I had to be somewhere junior high. So I'd say probably 13 years old, maybe 12 years old. Mm. And my friends took me up to Brighton. Keep in mind, I've gone snowboarding prior to this, but it's been like going to golf courses with friends where you're just literally going to hit a rail. And I've only done that a couple times, mm-hmm. but I had the experience of being a skateboarder for many years before that. So I kind of in my mind, I was like, I mean, if I could skateboard, I can snowboard, no problem. You know, let's just go. And I remember they took me to the top of a lift at Solitude, here in Salt Lake City, Utah, just in Big Comet Canyon, and took me to the top, and I strapped in, and I looked out. Like, as soon as, by the time I got done strapped in and stood up, they were gone. And I just remember looking around like, wait a minute. I'm like, nobody's going to explain to me that, like, what, at least give me some kind of hint. And then, like, I just see my friends just mobbing down the hill. They've already been snowboarding for many years. I mean, since they were children. So there's nothing to them. And they didn't think anything of it as well. Like, oh, we should maybe tell Stevie what to do. And I just remember it taking me, like, I'd say a good hour and a half to get down, and just like hearing kids making fun of me because I'm just like sliding down the hill, and like just the whole like embarrassment. And I remember that one moment like changed my life. I was like, if I'm doing this, I'm going to get better than anybody. Like, this sucks, you know?
Okay.
I definitely remember that experience. I'll never forget it. So.
Wow. So it's kind of an inspiration to almost pursue it, right?
Yeah, well, it didn't really give me the passion to pursue it quite yet, but it just, I'm a competitive person. And I maybe it's like an ego thing, but I hate being humiliated, like in the process of doing something that I don't know how to do yet. But it also gives me that motivation to kind of be like, okay, like if I'm going to do this, I'm going to get better than everybody around me, you know? Hmm. But, I just remember just the humiliation of just sliding down on my butt, knees and skateboard, and like, do you need help? And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, I can skateboard, I can kill it, you know? Like, why can't I do this? And just being so mad about it. And then getting down, and I'm actually from there on that after that experience, I didn't snowboard for like another 4 years after that. I was like, I'm over it.
I was going to say, so like what kind of happened next? How did you get to the point where you thought, okay, well, actually I am going to take this on.
Well, I didn't really like the thought. For one, it's like, this is such a weird thing, that like oxymoron that goes on in my life, but I just don't like being cold. I hate snow. So I like, that's always skateboarded, you know, and like I did summer sports, like I rode BMX, I skateboarded, and that was kind of, those are my things for a long time there. So when winter come around originally, I mean, mostly I just like mad because I couldn't go do my sports. And so I just had to sit around all winter and just, you know, twiddle my thumbs and keep myself, you know, entertained. And then my friends just kept asking me and like, hey, let's go snowboarding. And I was like, no, I don't, snowboarding's not that cool. I don't really want to go do that. And finally, well, I think I was 14 actually. So this had to be 2 years after this. So there's 2 years in between the first time I went and this time. And I was like, okay, I'll go. And then I started watching snowboard videos, and this had to be somewhere in like November because I was racing motocross at the time as well. So I was busy, you know, I had other sports. So snowboarding was not even on top of my mind. I had so many other things going on. But I remember being like watching snowboard movies with my friends and being like, oh, finding out the forum team, looking at like Devin Walsh, JP Walker. Finally, I'm like, oh, this looks really cool, actually. And I remember picking out my whole kit for the winter. Like, this is what I'm going to get. My mom's like, okay, finally, after, you know, kids are, you got to beg your mom and dad like 1,000 times to get you something, especially of that kind of price. You know, it's not like going to get a pair of shoes. And I just remember, she's like, okay, finally, like, dude, you bugged me enough. Like you've helped me around the house doing some things. Like, I'll get you like that kit. Thanksgiving Day, I'm on my last race of the year, and I broke my femur bone. So I remember that, and just being like, my mom be like, well, I guess you don't need that snowboard gear. And I just remember in my mind being like, damn, that really sucks. And I remember freaking out about it mentally. And then a year later, when I turned 15 going into 16, it took me a year to hit to heal. The following year, I think I started snowboarding, and that's when I was like, damn, this is what I want to do this. So to make a long story short, it took some dramatic things to happen for me to really kind of get in that sport.
Cool. Well, we'll kind of get into your career a little bit later on. But Alik, I want to kind of chat to you as well. What's your background? Because I know you do quite a bit of work with snowboarders and skiers, but you've also said that you're interested in like X sports, action sports, caving, base jumping, that sort of thing. Is that just from your interest as a mental performance consultant, or do you have kind of experience in those sports?
So extreme sports. Yes, but so you would consider, I would consider extreme sports encompassing. So you would encompass snowboarding, you would encompass base jumping, you would encompass motocross, BMX. Those kind of fall underneath the entire umbrella. So as far as me doing base jumping, no, I've never base jumped before, but that is that is impressive. Like Dean Porter, I know, Stevie, you know about Dean. Like he's a legend within base jumping and slacklining, stuff like that. I don't think I have the kahunas to really just like send it like that, tell you the truth. But but I did go down the road of snowboarding. I got kind of roped in to snowboarding, just like almost every other person. It was through skateboarding. So I mean, I've been snowboarding for close to 20 years, and then I've been an instructor / coach. I started that back in 2013. My town is kind of like is tucked in this nice little valley between the Shawangunks and the Catskills. So there's a lot of outdoor recreational activity in order for you to be able to like, it encourages outdoor activity pretty well. So with the encouragement of location and, you know, friends of the homies, it was easy for me to kind of step my foot into snowboarding. And once I got hooked, it just reeled me in. The funny thing, why I just continued to snowboarding was actually because of fear.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. So most of my time riding, I was afraid of the skills or like just afraid of snowboarding in general, right? Because it's a kind of a dangerous sport. And my friends were good, so they were doing certain terrain that I wanted to get into as well. But I would have that feeling, that physiological feeling at the top of a run that I can't necessarily make my way down this. So I had an anxiety that was popping up, but then there was also a physiological response as well. So that feeling was something that I wanted to get rid of. And I thought the only way to get rid of it was through it. And so I just kept coming back to snowboarding, just kept coming back. And so that led me to a full life of, you know, kind of just exploring the mountains. And then I got into sports psychology because I still wanted to explore that element of fear. And I was kind of curious in why that was a driving factor for me in snowboarding. And then I ended up working with Liberty University, which I'm currently doing. And they're actually going up to nationals this weekend up in Lake Placid. So I'll be able to join them, which is fantastic. And currently to this day, I mean, I still have a little bit of a better understanding on why that feeling, both mentally and physiologically, was a driving factor, but I'm still exploring it.
Exploring the fear of snowboarding, but not quite the fear of throwing yourself off cliff tops.
Yeah, guess so.
Yeah, I mean, that's not for me either, to be honest with you. I like the comfort of my indoor sports.
Yeah, it's so, a different feeling.
Yeah, yeah. So Stevie, then, obviously you turned pro at, what, 19, almost 20?
I think I was just turned 19. Uh-huh. Yeah, I just turned 19.
Just turned 19. So tell me a little bit about what the life of a pro snowboarder actually involves.
Good question. A lot of people think it involves a lot of snowboarding, but it actually involves a lot less snowboarding. Mm-hmm. And the reason that is because as a professional snowboarder, you're traveling a lot to get to different destinations to either ride in contests or, in my situation, a lot to film, you know, in different locations. And so, you know, it took me my first couple seasons to kind of get the idea of that, you know, your mentality has to be super strong and your body has to be super strong, because there'd be stretches where I wouldn't come home for a month and a half and snowboard maybe 6% of what I would usually do if I was at home, you know, because when you're home, you can go ride the resorts, hang out with, like, you know, with friends, or just do different things around the valley, you know, snowboarding, like go to the Bone Zone and stuff like that. But when you're on the road, you know, it takes you a day and a half to get to Europe, or it takes you a day and a half to get to Japan or something like that. And then you've got, you know, maybe one down day just to kind of get, you know, over the jet lag. And then you spend 2 days like scoping spots and finding things to hit. And then you just get right into the rhythm of it and start filming. And you do that for a month. You come home for, you know, sometimes I come home for, if I was lucky, come home for like a week and be able to snowboard a couple days. But in between that, you're still dealing with just other regular life stuff. And then you're right back at it again. And so it's just like, it involves a lot of traveling. Don't get me wrong, it's all fun, but it's really intense. But it's fun intensity that I asked for, and I was happy that I was able to do it. So
Yeah. So I mean, how do you kind of manage that then at such a young age? Because, you know, you look back now, at least I look back now at being 19, 20 years old, and you're like so young. Like, how do you manage all that stuff, that time on the road and kind of being away and all those challenges you just talked about?
It was tough at first, especially me coming from, you know, only snowboarding a couple of years of my life prior to it, like actual full seasons of actually putting in the effort to first acknowledge to myself mentally and emotionally that I want to be a professional snowboarder, and then putting in the work. And it's not just the actual snowboarding, but it's like the other, you know, I consider, like, it's funny that, you know, the name of the podcast is 80%, but what I would consider the 80% is like the work before you even step on your snowboard. Like the work over the summer, like the, you know, the training, the stretching and all that stuff. And then the 20% kind of comes easier because that's already a skill you've been working on. You're a snowboarder. Like you know, it's a passion of yours, but it takes a lot of like effort up front to make sure that you can actually even make it through a season, because you're going over, you know, you're hitting rails and falling on stairs, or you're out hitting big jumps and tumbling, you know, going really fast. And it's like, you've got to be mentally prepared for it and physically prepared for it. So it's a lot of preparation. And the first 2 years that I first seasons, I didn't really understand that yet, because I thought it would just be based on my passion and talent. But I quickly realized that the first two seasons I kept getting hurt because I wasn't prepared for it. And then, you know, going into the third season, I met a new trainer that taught me injury prevention, you know, how to go about it like mentally. And he worked with basketball players that were like on massive scales as far as like spotlight goes, you know, like young NBA stars. And so I started to learn their mentality, how to deal with all the things that come with their sport, and he kind of helped me transition that mentally into what, like, being a snowboarder. And he's like, dude, it's what the work we're doing now before you get in on the road and before you start traveling, that's going to help you get through it, that longevity. And a lot of it's like, it's mentally and it's your physicality. It's like being ready to go. And so after I started to really put all my energy into being like the best athlete I could, it made it a lot easier to deal with being on the road for a month. It made it a lot easier to like overcome injuries. And the honest with you, I just stopped getting hurt so often, and I was able to like really perform. And that just built your confidence. Every day you get a trick, you get more confidence. Every time you do something new, you get more confidence. And I was able to start to build on that over time. And then eventually it just became the normal for me, you know?
I want to kind of come back to some of those mental skills that you were talking about just then a little bit later on. But Alik, what do you make of this? You know, what are your thoughts on working with young athletes in this kind of space? You know, what kind of things might you do to prepare athletes for this type of, you know, type of endeavor, you know, being a professional, all the challenges that come along with that?
Yeah, I think it's, working with young athletes is interesting, because there's a lot that goes into it. I usually start from kind of the sport first, you know, so I think it's important, at least for the young athletes, to be able to, you know, develop that confidence and that confidence within a safe space, but also just being able to help them develop and manage risk. Right? There's a lot of perceived risk when it comes down to snowboarding, and there's actually a lot of real risk when it comes down to snowboarding. And so being able to decipher between the two is something that, as a young adult, they're looking for, you know, or as a young athlete, they're looking for guidance from, you know, their mentors, other riders, to be able to make the correct association on if this is something that I can actually do or not. And then that leaks into their confidence, right? So that develops their, you know, they're living vicariously through the other riders in order to develop their self-efficacy and their confidence. And so developing that, I think, is a good thing. And then as they decided to get into the professional route, or just like the comp route, or if they want to do video parts, if they want to do competition route, that's a big endeavor. And that's like, that's when you turn your fun and your sport into a profession, right? You decide to switch snowboarding within the snowboarding culture and context, and then move it into, okay, this is a sport now. You know, this is where I'm going to start to train and build that mental resilience in order for you to move forward. So I usually start with being able to give them the right associations and develop that confidence needed in order for them to believe they can tackle some type of obstacle. That's where I usually start. And then you just go from there.
Can I just add something to what you said, Alec, that was incredible, that really just opened up my eyes? Is like when you said risk management, like that right there is something that was one of the biggest lessons I had to learn too, was risk management and going out and film. Like I was the type that I was young and I was like just hungry. So I'd go out and we'd go and I wouldn't snowboard for 3-4 days and then we'd start filming and I'd try to do my biggest trick on the biggest rail right away. And that was my biggest downfall because I wasn't mitigating risk. I go like, hey, instead of trying to do a front 270, why don't you get a back lip? So you've got a safety trick. You've got a shot. You can build your confidence. You can, and then work from there. It's like, no, let's just go straight into it. And then you end up ruining your whole trip because you go down. And I think that's one of the biggest like hurdles I had to get over was learning risk management.
That happens all the time, especially with like young athletes. There's a tendency to be two athletes. So ones that you have like reel in and say, hey, you can't just send it off of this, you know, 40-foot booter first time in competition. Like you just got here, dude. You know, you can't just do that. And then you got the other athlete where you're constantly kind of like pushing to go harder because they don't have the confidence yet and trust in their past abilities and their current ability to go forward.
I mean, that sounds like a really tricky balance because, you know, you're both talking about, you know, the need to be confident. And like you're saying, kind of building confidence from the community around you, that vicarious experience, getting confidence from watching other people do stuff, building your confidence that way. But then you're also saying that you don't want to kind of get to that overconfident line where you have to kind of be real back in. Talk to me about that, Stevie, about managing that kind of the balance between confident enough yet holding back, because you know you put your hand up when Alik was talking about, you know, the overconfident athlete.
Well, it's interesting, Alik, especially like and Peter, because now being 38 and riding with a lot of younger I read a lot of like the younger black snowboarders and just snowboarders in general at Woodward Park City. and Alik is right, there's two types, and I was the first type, the one that you like got to have a conversation with before you get to the hill because you know they're going to do it. And then you got to, and then on the contrary, the other side of things, you got the guy that you've got to talk to 2 days before he gets there because you know he's a little timid. And there's like, it's funny to see that. And like now being 38 and riding with these different types of people, and there's these kids that can go out there and fire on the first run, just fire off on the jumps, and there's no problem. But again, as Alik touched on earlier, it's like they built that confidence because they've done it for so long and they just know, right? And then you got these guys that they really need. They take 6-7 runs to warm up. They're, you know, or they're really timid, or they work on one trick all day because they're like they're trying to do a back 270, but they can't get past the back 180, and they get frustrated, and then they go take a break, and their day's over with. And it's like it's very interesting. It's a very fine like line between the both. And for myself, like I, over the years, it's kind of taken me a little bit to develop the mindset. Is like, it takes me one or two runs to get warmed up, and then I've got to get into it. But I also have developed safety tricks in my mind that I know I can do. Like, okay, first run straight air, second run back three front three, switch back three, something like that, just a safety trick, and then I'm good to go, right? Or this rail trick, that rail trick. And then it's funny because if I wait too long, then I'm like, I waited too long, and but that energy and that dog in me that wants to just go out there and really get after it kind of teeters away really quick if I don't hit that fine line. And you can see in these different athletes, and I feel like kids these days are just machines. Like I back in the day, I used to see more timid riders taking all day to warm up, but I feel like with the availability of parks and all these different training facilities, kids are dogs these days. They can get out there and get after immediately. And I'm watching them. I'm like, there was no way I would ever be able to do that if I was a kid. But I also didn't have the opportunity to like have the Woodwards or the airbags and stuff like that. I think the mentality is changing because the sport and the availability and all the technology that's available to these kids now is just making them insane at this sport and like machines at it. It's cool to see.
Alik, you know, from your perspective as a mental performance consultant working with young athletes, like what are some of, you know, we talked about confidence already, but what are some of the other mental demands that you would say are maybe prevalent in this kind of sport? you know, what are the mental qualities that you might need?
I think there's a handful of mental qualities that I think will be beneficial. Actually, Stevie brought one up, was, you know, being able to understand your OZOF zone. So understanding where your activation levels are and being able to work within that, and just being aware and being connected to your general physiological response to the sport. So within snowboarding, there's always an underpinning of fear. And depending on how you perceive that fear will depend on how your body responds to it. So say you're a little worried about injury coming down the pipeline. You're a little worried about the conditions, you know, it's slightly icy, it's a little windy. That's more of just like a cognitive worry. So that element, being able to reel that in, or being okay and accepting certain risks, I think is something that as a young athlete, you have to wrestle with and understand. I think that's one of other skills. So fear of injury, I think, is another one. Being able to just general anxiety control, I think will be a good trait in general. Because also, as you're up there, you're shaking, you know, you can associate the handshake, the high heart rate as a problem. You know, your parasympathetic and your sympathetic nervous system are constantly pulling back and forth to each other and trying to find that balance. So I work with athletes being able to help reel that in and or adjust it if they need to, just because you can't be under aroused or you can't be over aroused when it comes down to riding, because you don't want to be lax. And when I mean lax, I mean you don't want to drop past your skill level to the point where, you know, you're not really paying attention, because your attention will go. And if you're not fully present when you're riding, you will catch an edge. Like, I remember there's this one, he was a ski race coach, and dude was a dog. Like, he was really good. And he would only ride on days where he could go full tilt. And there was plenty of reasons for that. One, it brought his attention to the current moment. And on top of that, well, that's honestly the biggest thing. So it brought his attention to the current moments. Therefore, he was able to get rid of anxiety. He was able to control his energy. He was able to eliminate the fear of injury. And he was confident because he was pointed down. You know, he was in his boots, shin into his boots, just pointed down and present moment. And so as an athlete, as a young athlete, it's always, you're trying to get into that present moment. And you can do that with skills of not worrying about injury down the pipeline, controlling your breath, controlling your response to that high heart rate that's always going to be there. And then developing confidence in order for you to be able to do something that's challenging in the future. Because every time you go to a different competition, the park setup is different, right? So you got to be comfortable and trust the skills that you have in order for you to be able to perform at that competition. Like, there's, and that's usually like rail jams or slope styles, but half pipes are obviously the same. But most, at least in the beginning, when you're in that grind, you're going to be showing up to different opens and different local competitions with a totally different setup. So you have to develop that confidence with yourself in order for you to move forward.
Stevie, you kind of talked earlier about, you said you'd worked with people who had worked with like NBA basketball players. And I was going to ask you, you know, like, is this something that you deliberately worked on, like the mental side of it? And if so, what kind of things would you do?
Well, it was my trainer, Eric Land. You know, I look at this guy as my, like a brother. I still talk to him this day a couple times a week. But really, it was just, you know, you can go into any gym and find a trainer, right? You can, you know, that's just, you know, there's a ton of those. But really what set him and our relationship apart is that he really only had probably about 15, 16 clients at a time, right? And everybody was individual time slots. And so everything was really personalized. And all the experience of like what he's learned with all these NBA players and all the things that they go through, he was able to kind of help me understand and see, like, I mean, at the end of the day, you're still a human being. You got regular human being responsibilities, and you just, a lot of it came down to just taking your craft seriously, taking, you know, your health seriously. You know, you only get one body. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I love this analogy. It's like everybody, you know, everybody wants to buy a house, but everybody gets one house for free, and that's your mind and your body, right? You live in your body. That's the first house you'll ever get. So how do you feel like, how do you want to live in your house? You can treat it like crap and feel like crap every day. You know, it doesn't matter what's out surrounding you. If you don't feel good on the inside, everything exterior is going to suck. And so I just really took like a lot of gratitude for like having the physical ability to be an athlete. And then that kind of helped me mentally be like, okay, let's take this more serious. You know, like don't play around. Don't show up late. Don't slack. Don't party all the time. Don't drink all the time. Like be serious about what, you know, who you want to be. And it's just cool. It was just awesome to see the different sports and different people and just the things that they did in their life and how you know, seriously took their sport. And it just made me more serious about, you know, who I am and being an athlete. And it was just, I don't know, it's just simple things, just like, you know, being humble for one, you know, and treating everybody the same. It doesn't matter how big you get or how far you go. Like you are still a human being. You need to treat people like a human being, you know. And it's just a lot of things that didn't even pertain to actually being a snowboarder that I just took on that kind of helped me evolve. I know it's kind of, you know, uncanny, but it's just life lessons that I've learned that helped me a lot, you know, along the way. So it wasn't anything particular, but it's just like a bunch of knowledge that I was able to apply to my career, you know.
This is the 80% Mental Podcast, and I'm here with the legend Stevie Bell and the other legend, Alik Herbert. We've been talking about the psychology of the slopes. We've been having a really interesting conversation about some of the mental aspects of snowboarding, the confidence, the fine line between confidence and overconfidence, that kind of perception of risk and risk management as well. Stevie, you kind of mentioned this before, and I wanted to ask, I feel like it's kind of an obvious question, but snowboarding and I suppose winter sports in general, really, skiing certainly, they're predominantly white sports, right? And I wonder how you have navigated that world as a black snowboarder.
Well, I think a little bit was being naive, you know? When you're young and you're hungry, there's a little, you know, you're a little bit naive. You know, at first it didn't, I mean, I knew it was white, but also you got to keep in mind, I grew up in Salt Lake City as a black man.
Yeah.
It's already white. So I already came into this world, into a white world that I'm already surrounded by it. So I think that kind of helped. And that's what kind of, you know, going back to when I said I was kind of naive by it, because those are kind of my current living conditions, just day to day going to junior high and high school and school anyway. So yeah. I just, you know, everything I did, it was just like, even if I played football, played basketball, played baseball, any sport I did, it was pretty much most white people. So it didn't change anything for me when I got into like extreme sports that were super white, because I'd already been used to that anyways. It was just a little different, because when I do ball sports with my brother, because, you know, he's only like 18 months younger than I am, it's like everybody like, oh, we'll take two black kids before we even try, you know. We'll take those two, you know. So it was cool. So we always made the best teams without even trying, even though we were really good athletes and won, you know, championships together and different things. But
yeah.
When I got into snowboarding, it was different, because I got to a point where, like, I mean, this is a whole long story, but I'll just kind of, you know, give it a reader's digest. But I didn't really notice that I didn't really notice anything until I actually went pro and then started getting publications and video parts and then that attention. But before then, it was just like, I was just doing my thing and having fun. And then you get, you know, the social media hate, you get people talking. And then that's where it kind of like dawned on me that I'm really doing something different. But that also gave me the confidence and like the motivation to be like, okay, well, you can think I'm token, like the token black guy, but I'm actually really good. And I put a lot of work into this sport. Mm-hmm. And I just let my dedication to my craft, like I was speaking about learning from different athletes and with my trainer, I let that work do all the talking for me. And then I just shut up and did my thing, you know? So I just navigated it by my hard work at the end of the day.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, you know, you mentioned like social media hate then, and I was just going to say, did you ever kind of run into anything like that? Any sort of, you know, issues, I suppose, being black in a predominantly white sport?
Yeah, of course. And it wasn't really, me that noticed it. It was more like, because social media just started becoming like prevalent in sports. Like as I was like going through my career, it wasn't huge like it is now. So everybody wasn't based off of it. I mean, we were still putting out actual DVDs. I know that there's going to be some younger audience that probably might not know what that is, but it's a circular disc that you watch movies on back in the day. You know what I'm saying? But so we were in that era still, you know, which is that was cool. And so we'd actually have movie premieres and travel and do stuff like that. And like, you would run into it, but it was like, it was weird. I felt like I kind of lived in this little bubble because I was on the biggest team with the biggest names. So people that came like around us were always love for us. But it was more like my mom that kind of brought it to my attention when she would like, I don't know, just random things she would see on Facebook or things like that, or comments and stuff. And she would like bring it to my attention. I'd be like, yeah, mom, but like, look at the 3 comments of all this hate. And then look at the 200-300 comments of people like stoked on what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm like, why focus on that? Let's just focus on the good. And let's just keep moving. And that was kind of it, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. And I guess, you know, that kind of community aspect, it seems to me as an outsider, it seems like that's like a really important part of this sport, that community. You know, even like in the Olympics, you know, you watch like the snowboarding in the Olympics, and they're all really just rooting for each other, like all the time, even in such like a massive competition like that. Talk to me a bit about that, about the kind of community aspect of snowboarding and how important that is.
Yeah, for sure. And I know Ali can you know, attest for this too. Like the thing about action sports is a little bit different than like a basketball, football, and baseball, where you've got teams and years and, you know, and decades of rivalries and things like that have evolved in sports, and that, you know, other players kind of take on as they join a team or they get on, you know, whatever the situation may be. But snowboarding and like action sports like skating and moto, I love it so much because it's more about how far can you push yourself. You're not going to necessarily lose to another team or another competitor because they flat out beat you like physically. They're going to beat you because they were better than you, they trained harder than you, and they actually went out and performed better than you did. So you can't really blame somebody else for you losing a competition or not getting like making an Olympic team or something like that. So it doesn't hurt you to cheer on your competition because they're not like they're going against you, but they're going against the terrain just like you are. So it's more about like you against the terrain than it is more about you versus them, like a 1-on-1 basketball or something like that. Yeah. And so with that, like it kind of creates a community of people wanting to like push the envelope and see other people push it. Because then that means I have to push it, you know, I have to step it up, or I have to do a better run, or I have to film a better trick. And like, it was just always fun to me, like just knowing that, like, yeah, I know that, you know, I'm going to be rooting for you just as much as you'll be rooting for me, but let's push this sport together. You know what I mean? So it's just a cool camaraderie.
Yeah. I always found the same thing. Like the equalizer is the terrain. And that's the cool thing. That's the cool thing, at least about snowboarding. You're never really looking at your competitors. Like you're always kind of in this tunnel vision because, you know, the biggest influence, the real external pressure, is from Mother Nature, and that's for everybody. That's like you can't outrun that. You know what I'm saying? Homie, I can't. You can't. Like that's what it is. You know.
Yeah.
So I always thought that was within the culture. Yeah, that's definitely how the community is. And because of that, you get really excited to see people do impressive things on a very challenging thing. Cause part of action sports is being able to look at the guy who said, okay, here's a challenging obstacle. Here's the risk. I'm going to calculate the risk and then I'm going to send it. Part of snowboarding is like, you don't want to be the macho-ness of I can do absolutely anything and take on any other risk is just immediately squashed by Mother Nature. Like he's just hammered. Like the guy who is calculated, the guy who does take precise risk, you would consider them to be like in that middle part, you know, have enough confidence to move forward, but not underconfidence. They're right in the middle. They can see all the obstacles that are going to come our way and, you know, be safe while doing something really dangerous. And those are the guys like that you look at and you're like, wow, they usually make it to the end. You know, they're usually there for a long time.
usually.
You ever hear that analogy? Like, you don't play boxer or you don't play fighter. Like, you don't fake those. Those are sports you just can't fake. Mm-hmm. Right. You'll get humiliated. Yeah. And that's like action sports. Like, you don't play snowboard. You don't play skateboard or motocross. Like, you either do it or you don't do it. And it'll show you who can and who can't real quick by who gets injured, you know? Yeah, like, it's like Mother Nature is the equalizer in any of the action sports. Like, you know, you do, you don't. It'll show you put in the work.
So what does that do then, Alik? The sense of community and having that support, you know, from a mental perspective, like, what does that do for an athlete?
I think it will, the psychological needs that it covers would allow people to feel safe, right? So it creates a little bit of a safe zone for you to move forward, right? So you're looking at your friends, you're looking at what they are able to do, and know that you're not getting essentially judged harshly in order for you to perform something that you may or may not fail at. And so I think psychologically it creates a pretty good bubble in order for you to move forward with and be motivated to push forward in a non-judgmental way. That's what I would consider what the community would entail and how it would help athletes progress.
I want to kind of touch a little bit on this perception of risk, because we kind of keep coming back to that, and you know, the sort of danger element of the sport. I did, one of my students did a study a few years ago now about perception of risk in dangerous sports, and kind of sports that me from the comfort of my armchair would think are dangerous. Like, the athletes in the sport don't see the danger in the same way, just because of the kind of meticulous preparation I guess understanding that risk in a different way than I would from just kind of watching it. Talk to me a little bit about that. This perception of risk, like this perception of danger, like, I see this as really dangerous. Like, do you see it the same way but are prepared for it, or do you just not see this as dangerous in the same way that I would?
So the one thing that I always thought was interesting, so from the outsider looking in, everyone sees would associate action sports and snowboarding as adrenaline junkies. And there's, you know, they're seeking out sensations. They're sensation seeking. And that was what Zimmerman's research was about, sensation seeking and how, and trying to understand the underpinning motives of high risk athletes. Come to find out that that's not necessarily true. There's a couple of the reasons why high risk athletes decide to participate in that sport. It could be, you know, having agency, emotional regulation, you know, just being able to emotionally regulate. And then if you say, or sometimes you get a personality, I forgot what the name was, it's like Alex Thema. But it's a personality trait. Essentially, you have a deficiency in your emotional regulation, and therefore you seek out anxiety provoking situations, which would then be high risk sports. But any high risk sport is essentially just like a skill. You learn patterns, you learn habits, and you develop that confidence. And that's what part of the skills needed to be successful at this is to be able to pick up on those patterns and habits and build that confidence forward. So from an outsider looking in, it looks like, wow, these guys are crazy. You're sending it off jumps, and they're probably just adrenaline junkies and looking for, you know, high sensations, but it's actually pretty calculated. And that's when you get into the culture, when you get into snowboarding, that calculated risk is actually encouraged, you know, so that's part of the community and allows those people to move forward. Cause some people in that culture, some people would be like, hey, that was a dumb risk. That was terrible. You shouldn't have done that. And then there was other guys that, you know, they can lay down step by step exactly why they decided they did what they did. And you're like, wow, okay, great risk management. Way to trust and lean on your confidence and equipment, and way to go forward.
Where do you fall on that spectrum then, Stevie? Has that changed across the span of your career?
Yeah, of course. I've gotten a lot older and I've learned from experience.
Yeah.
But I love that, you know, what Ali said there, you know, like on the more technical term, but from my perspective, it's like, for me, I look at it as I come alive when I'm going fast. You know, I come alive when I'm like pushing against that wall of fear and a hurdle. And I look at it and I'm like, okay, well, on the other side of that wall is, you know, what I'm seeking, like, whether it's, you know, like the landing a new trick or that feeling or whatever you want to call it. But I just love pushing towards it. You know, I hate running from fear or being afraid of things because it sucks. You know, I've always been like, let's push past that fear. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it just doesn't. But that's just part of the life I've chose. But I also look at it too. It's like every single time I get in my car and commute, I have a better chance of dying than getting hurt on my snowboard. All day, every day. Every time I jump in an airplane, I have a better, well, airplanes are relatively safe, but there's a risk. Everything's risky in life. Asking a girl to go out with you is risky. Trying to go on a date is risky. Meeting new friends is risky. So it's like, I look at risk as like an opportunity. You know, instead of looking at like fear, I look at risk as like, cool. Like, I'm going to risk this because I know there's a good opportunity I can get X at the end of this. Or I can get Y, and that's not what I want, but I'd rather find out the hard way or find out by doing than just kind of sit back and letting risk or fear kind of control my life. I've always been like, I'd rather just push through it and like let it help guide my life than, you know, like determine where I'm going. I don't know. It's like, I love risk. Maybe some people think, my parents think I'm too risky all the time. Like, even with my daughters, like, we just do crazy things all the time. Like, even just around the house, like jumping from couch to couch and all that. My parents like, what are you doing to these kids? And I'm like, dude, risk is fun. It's fun to be risky. It's fun to push yourself, you know, physically and mentally to just see how far you can go. So I think risk is such a good thing if you embrace it the right way and you go about it with the right mentality, you know?
I feel like I should embrace more risk. I'm quite risk averse, I think, compared to...
I'm not saying go, you know, like bungee jumping, base jumping and stuff like that. But I'm just saying, like, I like controlled risk. Like, me, myself, like on my snowboard or my dirt bike, where I can kind of control the scenario. But like base jumping and all that, I can't control that scenario. I don't feel like, I feel like the scenario is based on that parachute on my back, you know? Right. So it just depends on like what kind of risk you like.
So this is the 80% Mental Podcast, and I'm here with Stevie Bell and Alik Herbert, and we're talking about the psychology of the slopes. If you're enjoying what you're hearing so far, leave us a comment. You can go to the website, 80%mental.com. You can find us on Twitter at EPM Podcast or on Instagram at 80% Mental. I'd love to know what you think, and do share, like, subscribe, all that good social media stuff as well. So, Stevie, Alik, we're getting to the time in the podcast where we've been talking about the topic, we've been talking about mental skills and snowboarding. But what I like to do is I like to give our listeners the opportunity to get to know our guests a little bit more, like who's the real you. So I don't have a name for this game yet, but are you up for playing a game where I just get to know you guys a little bit more?
Of course.
Absolutely, yeah.
Fantastic. All right. So here's how it works. I've got four envelopes, and in each of these envelopes, I've got a set of questions. So we've got either or, we've got the last time, we've got deep and meaningful, or we've got the other one that I can't remember. It doesn't matter. You can pick a number. So if you pick a number between one and four, and I will pull out a virtual envelope because, you know, technology, and then I've got a set of questions for you. So, Stevie, I'll let you do the honors. Number between one and four.
One.
Okay. So,
number.
We'll go with one, and we've got the last time. So, a series of questions based on the last time, and reasonably quick fire. You know, no need to take ages to think about this stuff. So, first one. Last time you went on vacation.
Me?
Yeah, Stevie, you go.
Last time I went on vacation. Sheesh. Tahoe, I think it was. Oh, no, it was Mount Hood and it was July. Sorry.
Okay. Whereabouts is that? My geography.
It's in outside of Portland, Oregon, and it's I'm pointing with my finger like they can see me.
just behind you.
It's outside of Portland, Oregon. It's a summer ski resort, like a ski and snowboard summer camp where like there's this amazing skate park. It's pretty much like a big playground for adults, you know, yeah. And kids, like skateboarding, snowboarding, mountain biking, BMX, you name it, they've got it up there.
Cool. Awesome. Alik, what about you? Last time you went on holiday for UK listeners.
Yeah. So, last time I ended up going down to, Miami, Florida, first time ever in Miami. My wife was competing in Wodapalooza. And so she ended up actually placing third in Wodapalooza, which is fantastic for her and fantastic for like everyone. So
I don't know what that is, but it sounds awesome.
Wodapalooza is a like a CrossFit event.
Okay. Yeah,
it's CrossFit. It's CrossFit.
Yeah.
So she's super strong.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's impressive.
Yeah, yeah. She's pretty strong. So she wouldn't have married me. She when we first started dating, she said, "Hey, listen, what's your squat? What's your clean and jerk? What's your snatch? Like, I need to know that you can do that. You can lift heavier than I can before we start dating." And luckily, it worked out. So we're married now. So
fantastic. Okay, when was the? This is kind of topical. When was the last time you were really scared? Stevie, you go first again.
The other day, the other day we were at Snowbird hitting some little cliff and it wasn't even that big, but I don't know. I always get scared when I'm doing things on my snowboard. Doesn't matter what it is. And that's why I go. So just the other day.
But healthy fear though, right?
Yeah. Healthy fear. I think I ended up ragdolling, but it's okay. I'm still here.
Alik, last time you were really scared.
That's a tough one, actually. I did go rock climbing in summertime. That was an interesting one just because of conditions were a little iffy, you know. I trusted my friends, but you never know with rock climbing. Rock climbing is a different type of fear than snowboarding. And so it's much more like steady. Snowboarding is like just a big shot of fear. And so I had to deal with that. And that was a little rattling.
I'm not great with heights. So
yeah, I'm afraid of heights, actually.
That kind of instant and continuous fear. I totally get that. Yeah, last time you injured yourself, Alik, you go first this time.
I broke my collarbone snowboarding, actually.
Oh, really?
There was just like this little hip section. I was trying to cab three off of it, but there was a pole next to it, so it was kind of on this outside boundary. Point is that I ended up clipping my toe and just comes landing straight to flat and it broke my collarbone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Stevie, what about you? Last injury you had?
I sprained my ankle like about a month ago. Actually, it was at Zeb's event. We were filming on this jump and I just went a little too far and landed pretty deep. I rode out of it, but I'm still dealing with like the effects of the sprained ankle. So
yeah.
There's always just little knick-knack things that happen along the season.
Last time you, and this might be tied to the injury, last time you did something you instantly regretted.
Last time I did something I instantly regretted. There's a lot to choose from. I seem to be doing stupid things. The last time, well, actually, probably about maybe 2 weeks ago, I decided to pull out my dirt bike and ride a wheelie down my street as fast as I can get going. And I ended up coming to a corner faster than I usually do. And I put my wheel down and my handlebar started shaking. I thought for sure I was getting ejected off it going like 60. And I instantly regretted it as soon as I got back. As soon as I like controlled it and like slowed down, I was like, I instantly regretted that. And I put my bike right back in my garage. And my girlfriend was out there. My friend was out there. And they were just like looking at me like, dude, what are you doing? Like, that's what I do. That's who I am as a person. That's dumb things.
Fair enough. But you own it though, so that's all right.
Yeah, I have the video on my Instagram. Like it's pretty crazy. But
Alik, last time you did something you regretted?
I would probably say working out with my wife. Yeah.
I feel like there's a story behind that.
She's very fit. She is highly capable of being a great CrossFit athlete. And, you know, I'm more of a sprinter, you know, she's an endurance type of person. And we were doing like a endurance workout and I just got smoked. So it was a shot to the ego.
I think I would instantly regret that too.
Yeah. Like this dude was just like, time. And then we went, I was like, oh no, this is it. No backing out.
Okay. Last one. Last time you got a gift, Alik, you go.
Last time I would consider this a gift. My wife sent got me some cool stickers from the mountain that we went to, Gore Mountain. That was a good gift.
For me, this is gonna sound corny, but to be honest with you, every day being able to wake up and being healthy is a gift. Like I've come to like really appreciate just overall good health and life, you know. Outside of that, I did just get a couple new board bag, and that was pretty rad. So
every the precious gift of life.
Yeah, I mean,
and a new bag.
Yeah, and a new bag. But I mean, like, if you just look at the world that we live in these days, it's like there's just always so much death and destruction going on. I'm like, I'm just happy to wake up and just be alive. A lot of the times, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I think that is a perfect place to end our getting to know you game. Thank you both for playing. I will think of a name for it at some point.
Awesome.
That was fun.
So just a couple of questions left, really. I know, kind of coming to the sort of the end of the time that we've got. Obviously, there are some barriers to entry to a sport like this, right? So if I want to play basketball, I just need a ball and that's it. You know, Stevie, why should young kids make the effort to try and get into a sport like snowboarding?
That's a really good question. And it's a tough question because it really kind of just... It's nice to be able to get outside of what the, you know, especially for black athletes, like the norm, the ball sports, you know, it's like, that's what we're expected to do. And it's nice to see that, you know, there's athletes starting to emerge in all these other different sports, like even ice climbing, you know, but snowboarding's just, you know, overall a fun community. And it's fun to just go ride your snowboard and like experience the mountains like nobody else will ever, unless you go skiing or snowboarding, you know, like riding a snowboard through the trees and like the beautiful views and just the different like terrain that you can come across is such an amazing experience. And I just feel like everybody should experience it in their own way. And that's why I feel like everybody should pick up a snowboard or even skis. It doesn't matter, but like just get out in the mountains and play. It's just so much fun.
What do you think, Alik? Because obviously, you know, you kind of work with a lot of athletes, but you're a snowboarder yourself as well. What's your take?
I agree, actually. I agree that I think that Mother Nature, I think that there's science that backs the fact of being out and outside, being participating on recreational sports that, you know, are rock climbing, that revolve around the ocean, that revolve around mountains, stuff like that. You know, there's good mental health benefits by participating in those sports. And I think that it's beneficial for youth athletes to be able to, you know, have that outlet for them. You know, Mother Nature is I would say healing to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And having that, you can't necessarily get that in a ball sport, in basketball, soccer. I mean, you're outside and playing soccer, but it's different when you're actually using the terrain as something to play on. You know, you're using the terrain you have some type of agency behind what you're actually doing outside. And so I think it would be beneficial for athletes and learning about risk. I'm a big proponent on, you know, teaching kids how to play with fire, essentially. You know, like they're going to eventually learn about it one day or another, but you just want to give them the right tools to be able to understand what they're dealing with, because they're going to mess with it one way or another. Every little kid ends up playing with fire at some point. Why not me teach them how to appropriately play with fire? And I see risk as the same thing.
So, and again, this is kind of a loaded question, but how do you remove some of these barriers to getting into a sport like this? Because you need a little bit of money, you need a little bit of equipment. You know, not everybody is in a situation where they can do that. So how do you remove barriers for young kids who maybe do want to get into a sport like this, but maybe don't have the opportunity or the access?
Yeah, I think there's a really hard push right now, especially like on the East Coast, being able to break down these barriers for kids in certain communities, right? So Hoods to Woods is an organization out here that is, Stevie knows about it. Yeah. Hoods to Woods is out here. And that's a good organization to be able to just break down barriers and say, hey, listen, we'll introduce it to you. And then you'll figure out that you'll like this sport, and then you'll commit. And then we can really like get you the materials, get you the stuff that you need, and then you just keep moving on. So I think there's a nice push, at least on the East Coast, of nonprofit organizations just opening up and saying, hey, it's time to get more Black people on the mountain. You know, that's it's time. This sport not only will help with mental health benefits, but it's also just a great sport to be into. You know, you learn so much. There's different avenues in order for you to just develop your confidence, your self-esteem, and your ability to just be a good human.
Stevie, what's your thoughts on this? Removing some of those barriers.
I love it, because like Omar is my guy. Yeah, the Hoods, the Woods, like there's a Chill Foundation. There's a bunch of things that are going on like that are in the Black community, getting more of us out there, not just Black, but like the Latino community, Asian community, and all that stuff that are just like encompassing everybody to let's go snowboarding. But and that's really rad, because a lot of those things didn't exist when I got into it. It was just kind of more like fate that I got into it. I lived in Salt Lake City. I lived at the end of a bus stop that took you straight to the mountain. Like I had people around me that snowboarded, so I kind of fell into it. And so through my career, I wanted to use myself and my story a lot to inspire other people around the world to, you know, to go snowboarding, you know, no matter what your situation is. Like there's always, if there's a will, there's a way. I mean, in a sense, you know, it's a lot easier if you live in the mountains, but if you live in, you know, Louisiana, it's going to be a little tough. But I actually have a good friend that snowboards that's from Louisiana, more than I do every year. But you know, just like getting involved in some of these foundations is the easiest way. You know, they'll help get you there, or they'll help introduce you to people who can get you there, right? And then like I know there's a lot of them even on the West Coast too that are, you know, helping. I did this one called Ski Jamming that was in Fresno that took kids up to Tahoe and New Mammoth and stuff like that. So I always use like myself as an influence to kind of join foundations and like kind of help spread the word. Or another thing too is like I'm always open to, like, if people hit me up, I give my gear away sometimes. Like, if somebody's in need, like, here, I got an extra board for you. Here, I got a pair of boots for you. Yeah, I got some gloves for you. And if I don't, then I can find somebody who does. You know, there's always ways to give back. It's just more about sometimes it takes more creativity than it does take capital. You know, it's just depending on the situation. So, yeah, just putting out that effort, you know. There's so many people out there that need help, and there's a lot of people out there that are willing to help.
Cool. Well, what we'll do is some of those foundations that you just mentioned, I'll get you details of them later on, and I'll put them in the episode description. So if anybody's kind of interested in checking any of that stuff out, then just go to the episode description, have a look, and they'll be there. Stevie, last word to you then. A lot of experience as a pro snowboarder. Give me your favorite experience, story or memory from your time as a pro athlete?
That's the hardest question I've got all day, just because there's so many experiences. But I think one of my favorite experience personally was I got the chance to go down to what's called Lesotho, South Africa. and snowboard at a place called Afriski. And that was insane because we flew into Johannesburg and then drove all the way up. It's about 6 hours north up until Lesotho. But, you know, I am a black man and I am African-American and those are my roots. And so to be able to go back and like see the country, see the motherland, but more importantly, like being able to see the different ways of living, if you will, like from being in Johannesburg, that's like being in Europe, to traveling through all these different towns and townships to get to the actual ski resort and just seeing how people actually live was just like a humbling experience. It made me really appreciate what I have in life. And then the snowboarding was insane. It was so fun. They had an amazing snowboard park. And we were there for like a week and got to do some really good snowboarding. It's, you know, and in my mind, it was like, cool, we're going to South Africa. We'll get a couple of days of riding in. But we actually got power days there too, which was insane. Like, and they were like, it's very rare you get a pow day here. And I got stuck there for 2 days riding pow. And the experience just changed my life forever. Like, it just gave me so much gratitude for what I have, you know?
Oh, that's awesome. I think it's as good a place as any to wrap things up, I think. So the only thing left really is for me to just thank you both so much for giving up your time to come on the 80% Mental podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. So, Alik Herbert, I knew I was going to be the one the whole episode, right to the end, and I'm the one that fucks it up. Every time. Alik Herbert, thank you so much for taking a bit of time and coming on the podcast today.
Yeah, absolutely. It was my pleasure. It's awesome.
And to you, Stevie Bell, thank you. Really appreciate you taking some time.
No, I'm really stoked. Thanks for having me. And Alik, thank you for, you know, reaching out to me on social media, man, and helping me line me up with Peter. This has been an absolute pleasure. Can't wait to check out this episode and other episodes that you've already previously done. So.
Awesome. Well, I'll put links to you. Fuck my life. It's late here. I'll put links to all of your social media stuff in the episode description. So again, if people want to reach out to either of you, I'll make sure that they can do that. Or if people just kind of want to check out what you're doing, I'll put links to all your Instagram and stuff in the description. So do go and check that out. I hope that you lot out there in Listenerville have enjoyed this episode. I've certainly enjoyed it. It's been a really wonderful conversation. Don't forget, leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Find us on Instagram at 80% Mental, on Twitter at EPM Podcast, or go to the website 80% Mental, where you can listen and subscribe to all our other amazing, wonderful, incredible episodes. Do go check them out. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I will see you next time. Well, I won't see you though, will I? Because it's a podcast, isn't it?